Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 11th day of September, Anno Domini 2021, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 9 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
Wait a minute. We got to interrupt, folks.
Yes.
Because I don't have a tune that I can pull up, but it was somebody's birthday yesterday.
This is birthday month.
Yeah.
All four of us have birthdays this month. The three of us and Soundbites.
Yep.
All have birthdays this month.
And yours was yesterday.
Mine was yesterday.
And I assume you had a very good one.
We had a very good one. Thank you very much. My daughter came over, and that's always a joy. And we had lovely food and lovely presents and lovely time, and it was great.
Well, congratulations.
Thank
sir.
You. Thank you. It was terrific. And you're coming up,
Yep.
Yeah, he's the 19th.
Yep.
And I'm the 20th.
Yep. We're all essentially
Virgos.
Holiday babies.
Yeah, Virgos.
That was a really cold winter.
It was a really cold winter. Sometime between Thanksgiving and Christmas.
No, it had to be two cold years.
Three.
Well, yeah.
Because, the reason I say that is because a year after I was born, to the day, my sister was born.
Well, it's you know, when you got
to
schedule.
You talk about rhythm.
I remember when we were doing our Lamont's classes.
They
made a big thing about, so remember to buy condoms.
Yeah.
Because you haven't been using them for a while, and you should start soon.
Yeah.
I don't think they ever told that to my grandmother, because she had 19 kids.
Yeah.
Get a television, lady.
My grandfather was...
something else to do in the evening.
Good genes.
Yeah. Good genes. All right, let's get to the news. Microsoft has confirmed yet another Windows 10 vulnerability. It seems like this is deja vu all over again. And it's
every
being
month.
Actively exploited, with attackers taking advantage of a security loophole that remains unpatched. I could just put that sentence at the beginning of every single news every week. Visiting a maliciously designed web page or opening a compromised document from your email or wherever could be enough to allow hackers to take control of your PC, Microsoft admits, though it has a number of threat mitigation suggestions to reduce the risk. We're not going to do anything, but you can.
Yeah.
The MS-HTML remote code execution vulnerability was confirmed on Tuesday. Microsoft is investigating reports of a remote code execution vulnerability in MS-HTML that affects Microsoft Windows, they said. Microsoft is aware of targeted attacks that attempt to exploit this vulnerability by using specially crafted Microsoft Office documents. Such a document would need to be opened on a PC in order for the exploit to work, not simply be saved to it. So you'd have to actually open it. But if you're not going to open it, why are you saving it?
Yeah.
An attacker could craft a malicious ActiveX control to be used by a Microsoft Office document that hosts the browser rendering engine, and it's all about the browser. The attacker would then have to convince the user to open the malicious document. Users whose accounts are configured to have fewer user rights on the system could be less impacted, well, that's Microsoft, than users who operate with administrative user rights. So if you're logged on as the admin, your machine is wide open. If you're logged in as a regular user, you are less wide open, but that's about all. It is worth noting that both Microsoft Defender Antivirus and Microsoft Defender for Endpoint have detection and protections for the vulnerability. If those are running on your PC and set to automatically update their definitions, you should be protected. However, there is still no specific patch to close the loophole itself. Instead, Microsoft has a number of workarounds and mitigations. For a start, documents from the internet are automatically open in either Protective View or Application Guard for Office that prevents the malicious ActiveX control from running. You could, however, go one step further still and disable ActiveX controls from being installed in the first place. Any existing ActiveX controls you have already installed will continue working, Microsoft points out. The company has directions on how to do that, though it's worth noting that it involves adding the Windows registry, and that can be a cause of real headaches if you inadvertently change something you shouldn't. There's an easier way to keep safe, which we will tell you about. When you open a document from the web or email, you can't edit it unless you click the Enable Editing button. So don't click that. If you don't click it, then you don't run the ActiveX controls. Also, don't download documents from the web and don't open documents from email unless you're absolutely certain they come from a safe source. You know, we'll talk about that in a minute. It's not been a great year or so for Microsoft when it comes to security, particularly with zero-day exploits. Several vulnerabilities in the Windows Print Pooler, for example, have been identified over recent months, which could potentially allow hackers to completely take control of a compromised PC. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is yet another zero-day for Windows. Your choices are: I'm not surprised, I'm getting tired of this, going commando, baby, Windows, and, of course, other. So far, we have, this is a little slow this morning, I apologize, we have 27 votes, and Windows is the number one choice. And I'm sure you'll have more to say about this. So you can find our forums if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating. At our Soundbites website, soundbites.org, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. The first choice is the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least the number one item under poll discussion is 11 September 21, yet another 0 day for Windows. You can also find that on the left under recent forum topics if you scroll down to that. So far, we've got two people who've posted, me and Larry. And of course, you can also give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415. Look, we get these all the time. Spam, phishing attempts. Your account is overdrawn. Somebody bought this. They did that. They whatever. Thank you for buying this thing. Click here for your invoice.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever. And there's a document that you absolutely must open right now.
Yep.
From banks. Lately, it's been banks.
You don't need to tell them they got the wrong person. They got the right person.
Yeah,
they got the right person. So what I do is when I get something from a bank that's not mine, I throw it away. If I get something from a bank that is mine, I go look at my bank statements online, which I know I'm going to the right place. I don't click anything in the email. I don't do any of that nonsense. I just go there on my own. And lo, that thing they're talking about is never there. Yep. Not ever, not once.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise.
I had an interesting one the other day. I had an alert on my Amazon card that there was a charge for card not present. And I keep looking at my account and nothing shows up. So, you know, somebody was probing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But then a week later, I actually did buy something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I get another notice that there was a charge for more than a dollar. And that was the one I bought.
Yeah. I did that. I got that the other day. My wife had a bunch of work done on her car. Bunch of work done on her car. And
Unusual
patterns. So I got an email from my bank. That said, this charge has been made. You should check it immediately. And it was not for the number I thought it was. Because this was one where I was in the middle of a meeting online. My wife just took my credit card and left the house.
Yes, dear.
Yes, dear.
In the olden days, my dad would just give mom the whole wallet and she'd walk into the store.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. Same idea. So I actually looked online and saw that was it. That was the charge from the garage. And I called my wife and said, read me the amount at the bottom. And it was, in fact, the correct amount. So it was fine.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
But I didn't click on anything in the email. I didn't believe them. I didn't trust them.
That's why they still have a phone.
That's right.
You know, that's
that would have been the next thing. I can look it up online, so I did that, and I called her, and that's fine. But the next step would have been to call them.
Well, I mean, just verifying it with your wife. That's right. Still, right. You know, doing some due diligence instead of just going, oh, gee, I guess that's the way it is.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, does that take an extra minute? Yes, it does. Oh, no, an extra minute? So, you know, take the time. Do your due diligence.
Yeah, well, I just this past week got another one from Citibank saying that, you know, oh, you better check these charges, you know. Okay. Problem is, I don't have a Citibank account to go and check.
Right.
That's the first big tip.
Yeah.
That's a big tip. Mm-hmm. So I just throw those away.
But the thing of it is, though, folks, yeah, I know you can get suckered in because they take the time and effort to, even if you click on them and go to, say, the various websites or anything else, they make it look as authentic as you can believe. But the key thing is you got to check where it's taking you as far as the website.
And almost all the time, there's some grammatical errors.
Yeah,
because most of the scams are not from native English speakers.
Right.
So there'll be a comma weird or, you know, grammatical error weird. I see a lot of them in the Mac community coming, you know, claiming there's something wrong in your Apple ID and to click here. I have to give the bad guys a little credit because they're using Apple's Cork, Ireland address in the return address.
Oh.
So they're targeting, you know, European.
Right.
Customers instead of, you know.
Well, but also not native speakers and may not catch the issue.
Yeah. So, you know, there's one thing, because if it really came from Apple in the U.S., it would come from Cupertino.
Right.
But the key thing is, though, and there's not one credit card out there that, you know, if you get an, say, a bogus message or something, you know, an email or anything else, all you have to do is take that credit card out, and on the back of it is a phone number. You pick up the phone and you dial that phone number and you can talk to the actual company that credit card is drawn on and ask them to check and, you know, verify things. They'll right. gladly do it for
They're
you.
They're happy to do it.
Yeah, I haven't ever, you know, if I've got a question on my account or anything else or on my cards, I can easily, like I say, quick pick it up, boom, dial that number and they'll answer any questions.
Yep. Yep. And so, yeah, you can do that anytime, and you should. And you should also give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Phones are open. Operator is standing by.
Side note, I do have to, excuse me, I'm not sure whether it was you or your wife that posted it, but talk about downloading images and all that. You folks put up, like I say, I'm not sure whether it's you or your wife, this measuring chart.
Oh, yeah, it was me.
And I downloaded it and paid, you know, printed it off for the wife and put it inside the cupboard. When she's mixing stuff up, she can just open up the cupboard door now. And what it is, folks, it's if you're ever like me, you know, and you're trying to remember, well, how many tablespoons are in a quarter cup?
Yeah.
Or, you know, this.
The only one I remember is a pint is a pound the whole world round. That's all I remember.
But that chart makes it so easy. It takes you right from the gallon right on down to an eighth of a cup.
I like and they're the all connected. And,
I yeah. like the one with Dr. Strange.
Yeah, I got that one too. Yeah.
And so I printed it off for her and taped it in. And it's so handy for her. She can just quick, boom, boom. Oh.
I saw a meme. There was a sinkhole opened up in a freeway somewhere, and the headline was a sinkhole the size of 6 or 7 refrigerators opened up in the freeway, and the caption was Americans will do anything not to use the metric system.
Yeah. Well, I do 3D printing About 100% of everything I print is for my wife. I'm just her print monkey. That's what I do. But she designs these things, and then helpfully, she's not listening, thank God. She's at market. She helpfully tries to put them in metric, because that's what the printer does. So I have to convert it into metric in order to actually design the thing and CAD it.
Yeah.
She does seem to have a problem understanding the difference between millimeters and centimeters. So she said to me, you know, you got to do something that's 30 centimeters long. I said, no, I don't think so.
That's pretty long.
Pretty long.
15 inches.
Yeah, exactly.
Two and a half centimeters per inch.
Yeah. I said, no, I don't think that's what you want. I think you want millimeters. But we got that all figured out, and now I just ignore her.
Neil Tyson had an interesting rebuttal to that on Star Talk. We already use the metric in a lot of things we don't sort of remember. Drugs.
Right.
You don't buy a pound of heroin, you buy a kilo of heroin.
Right.
But everybody
who grew up in the 60s knows what a kilo is worth and what it weighs.
But prescription drugs are sold by the CC, cubic centimeter or milliliter. And I'm not going to remember them all, but we use so many things. I'll find it and post it. We use so many things that are metric without realizing it, that it shouldn't be hard to switch, you know, lengths. Right. You buy a liter and 2 liters of soda.
Right.
That's fine.
The thing is, we think we're stupid.
Yeah.
We've convinced ourselves we're too stupid to switch to the metric system. Okay, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
Many of us are not. If you think you are, you by definition
short-selling yourself.
Yeah, exactly. But you could if you wanted to. It wouldn't be hard. It wouldn't be. I mean, it's not like trying to drive on the other side of the street. There's pictures of countries that did that, switch to the other side.
I remember seeing it. Yeah, they literally. Yeah. I think it was in England or one of those countries, and they showed this video how. Today is the day of change, and they showed folks slowly switching the lanes that they drove in, and everybody's going super slow.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the statistics was it was, I think, weeks before anybody got a speeding ticket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
the steering wheel's on the wrong side.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they're, because their perception is way off now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a thing I noticed about my car. My car is a Nissan Cube, which they don't even make anymore, and it was originally a right-hand drive. So they switched the steering wheel, of course, but there's a bunch of things they didn't switch, including the back door. The back door now
opens the wrong way,
and so it's very weird. It's a very weird little thing.
Right. Nutrition labels. Grams of fat.
Grams of fat.
Well, for a long time, that we've had both units.
Right.
But they should just stop printing the English units on future labels, and we'd all get used to it.
Yeah, getting used to meters.
I did read in England, a pint of beer is still a pretty good unit. Because, you know, a half liter is too small, a liter is too much.
Right.
So it's 500 milliliters.
This is also... the nation that thinks a quarter pound of meat is bigger than a third of a pound of meat because four is bigger than three.
This wasn't one of the big chains tried to release a third pound burger to compete with McDonald's quarter pounder, and it flopped because everyone thought it was smaller.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, meters is pretty easy to remember because that's close to 3 feet.
It's close to a yard, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, it's not that big of a deal.
That's the problem is you have to stop translating. It's just, you know, that thing is, you know, 4 meters away. But in English units, it sounds farther. You know, we're going to go, you know, 5,000 feet. Oh, okay, that's kilometer and a half.
Right, right,
and
right.
You know, it's only 1,500 meters, so it's...
Right. And pretty much everybody, at least recently, who served in the military understands kilometers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And meters. They understand them.
In 24-hour time.
In 24-hour time.
Actually, that gets even worse. Military time, it's all Zulu. So you you have to coordinate in your time zone separately too. So if you, you get a mission at 1800 Zulu, you better know what time zone you're in. To
exactly. Zulu versus UTC.
Well, yeah, right. UTC.
UTC is totally different too.
Well, Greenwich Mean Time, they're trying not to use anymore because they don't want to be country centric. So now it's universal time coordinates.
Yeah, right. Like right now, UTC time is 16:27:28.
Yep.
So yeah, you gotta. That's one thing I had to get used to because you know all the stuff I do for contesting and all that for ham radio. Is all based on UTC, so that way it's fair for the whole world.
Yep.
Instead of trying to remember, well, what time zone are they in, or this, so everything is always based on UTC.
And I wrote myself a little Python routine that gives me time in multiple places. Yep. One of them, UTC.
It's like you used to see on TV news. They had those all the clocks across the wall.
Yeah,
yeah, some pretty obvious. Stuff.
And then daylight savings time has to change. Stop.
Yeah, they should just end that.
Yeah.
We need to stop that. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. You're listening to Sound Bites on member supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Everybody, chair dance. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Mark from Greece, New York on the line. What's up, Mark?
They say it's your birthday.
Hey, hey.
Happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
You know, you share a birthday with Danny Hutton from Three Dog Night.
Yep.
And Jose Feliciano.
Yep.
And Joe Perry from Aerosmith.
Yes, I do. Yes,
you're
I do.
An important guy.
Yeah.
That was a busy hospital.
No, they're not all the same day.
Oh.
Yeah. or the same hospital.
that's pretty good company, though, right?
It is indeed. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. Question for you. I have a very bizarre experience with a hard drive. It's a 1 terabyte Seagate Barracuda drive. And one day I open Crystal Disk Info, and it has a caution. So I said, okay, something must be wrong with the drive. So I go into Windows, and I do the long scan for bad sectors.
Yeah.
And it took, you know, a long time.
Yeah.
And Windows comes up with nothing. So then I try another program that I have for finding and repairing bad sectors, and it found nothing. And I went in, and I said, well, geez, let me just format this drive. I'm going to get rid of it anyways. You know, I'm going to format it and destroy it and get rid of it. I formatted the drive, and I go back to the drive after I do everything I have to do, and instead of it being a 1 terabyte drive, it turns into a 1.9 terabyte drive.
Huh.
I can't figure it out.
Yeah, but no, well, that's very simple. No, it goes back to the old days. Remember with MFM drives and RLL drives, they'd start out maybe at 500 meg. And if it didn't pass that test, then they'd move it down to, say, a 250.
But doubling, that's more than
a lot.
I would think.
Not nowadays. Look at the terabyte drives that they're making. Oh,
well, you know what it might have been? And it may have been a 2 terabyte drive to begin with. And when it originally came, they formatted it into a C and a D in that computer.
That's a possibility. Or whoever. Did you format it yourself originally?
Yes. Yes.
It's just that's very weird. And the programs that you use, like Crystal Disk and all of those, Those are also reporting it as a 2 terabyte drive?
Now, after I reformatted it, and it was always formatted in NTFS. It wasn't FAT32. It was NTFS, and it was and it wasn't a wasn't formatted as a master boot record. It was the other
GUID.
Yes.
Yep.
And both times it was formatted that way. I can't figure it out, but nothing but Crystal Disk is also saying that there's been bad reallocated sectors.
What's the well, every disk has reallocated sectors, whether you know, what reports it or not is the question.
No drive is
what
perfect.
What does the disk physically say on it?
1 terabyte.
So maybe it was a 2 terabyte drive.
It didn't pass the test, and they marked it down.
Yeah,
because they won't throw it out.
That's
a
long way to mark down.
Yeah, not really. Not nowadays. You got to think in terms of, you know, it doesn't cost them much,
right?
The material, you know, they're still making a profit on this item that they produced. They can't sell it. Maybe they might lose $20 on their end or whatever. Yeah, so
can it have anything to do that it's a shingled magnetic drive?
Pardon?
Can it have anything to do with it being a shingled magnetic drive?
See, I don't know the company's standards as far as testing and everything else. What, you know, qualifications, you know, because if they're putting their name on it, you know, they want to be able to have, you know, a little bit higher standards than, you know, get the reputation of being junk. Like, for a while, there are some drives were really getting bad names because you'd get them, and you could order, say, 15 drives. 10 out of the 15 would fail within the first week.
Yep. Steve Gibson used to have a contract with Compaq, where they bought a site license for SpinRite, and Compaq would test every single disk that came in before they went into a computer and had, like, a 30% failure rate and would send them back. The drive companies contacted Gibson to tell him to stop doing that.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, that's just the way it is.
Okay, because I know now a lot of people are complaining that they're getting shingled magnetic drives and they're not posting it on the literature or on the box or anything, that it's a shingled drive. I know they're doing that to make to be able to get more space out of the disks. So I was just wondering if that had anything to do with it. We're reporting a bigger size now.
It shouldn't.
Unless the original OS that formatted it couldn't understand that.
But if possibility. If it was shingled to be 2 terabytes, if it's shingled and not formatted with something that didn't understand shingling.
I would check the deep specs for that specific part number on the manufacturer website and see what it's supposed to be capable of.
For everybody else, a standard non-shingled hard drive just writes data on the drive. A shingled hard drive kind of, this is weird, overlaps data like shingles on a roof. So you can fit more data on, but I don't think you can double it. But
especially on an SSD, it used to be each cell was either a 1 or a 0, so it was 1 bit.
Right.
Single level cell recording. Then they started doing 2 bits per cell and 3 bits per cell. So
and now 4 bits per cell.
Yeah. So they're trying to separate, you know, a quarter volt, half a volt, 1/3 volt, 1 volt in that single cell, which increases the capacity but makes each cell more vulnerable to failure.
Yeah, and so
most SSDs have a huge spare reserve so that when that cell eventually fails, they can map it in. So we've been hearing that a lot of companies are relying more on error correction than they are making the drives right in the first place.
Right.
So that 30% error rate, you just put 30% more cells in it.
Yeah, and this depends on the spacing, too.
But this is a magnetic drive, right? Because it's a Barracuda.
Yeah.
Right. So you're right, it's shingled. I wouldn't have thought that shingling could double the capacity.
Mm-hmm.
I do, especially depending on their spacing.
Oh, here's something. Archandra in the YouTube chat, what block size did you tell it? Maybe if you tell it smaller blocks, you get more blocks per drive.
Yeah, I didn't do anything with that, well, that I know of, unless it was incidental. I didn't change anything. Everything I did was just...
The defaults?
You know, default, yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I'm just don't know what to do with this drive now.
Yeah, I don't know if I trust it.
Assuming that maybe it does have a problem.
Is it still under warranty?
You can go, oh, great, it's 2 terabytes.
No, it's probably a year out of warranty now.
Or, oh, it's only supposed to be 1 terabyte. Something's not right.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I honestly don't. I'm not sure. You're right. Well, if you use a different block size, you get more blocks, but those are smaller blocks, so it shouldn't change
the total capacity
that way.
It's like that drive I was telling you about a couple of weeks ago. It said it was a 4 terabyte drive, but it formats out to 3.6 terabytes. It's not a 4 terabyte drive. It's a 4 trillion byte drive.
Right. And then some of that is taken up with the roadmap to the formatting.
That's all the math and how they figure out what actually is.
If you have a copy of SpinWrite, that might be interesting to run on it, because that does that does a block by block scan. It doesn't care about the file system or the file structure. It just looks at the raw data on the drive.
Right.
See what it says, and that would also find and repair any bad blocks.
Yeah, I would do that before I trusted it.
Right.
But if you get a free, if that comes out good, and you end up with a free extra terabyte, you win.
Yeah, it's a win-win. Yeah,
exactly.
So good luck.
All right, thank you guys. I appreciate the help.
Yep, thanks.
Yep, bye-bye.
Yeah, that's so weird. I wouldn't have thought shingling would double.
Mm-hmm. Half again, maybe.
Half again, I would expect.
If it's overlapped by half.
Right.
But so, how can it overlap? The bits are either this way or that way.
Look, I stopped understanding drives when RAID came out. Okay. Yeah. That's magic to begin with, and now shingling is magic.
And I'm looking at the Wikipedia entry, and it's magic.
Yeah, basically, that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's just magic.
And they're filled with helium.
Yeah.
Because it's smaller than air. So it's easier for the heads to move through it.
Right.
And it's easier than making it a vacuum.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dan from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Dan. What's up?
Hey, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Happy birthday, Nick, at least for next year.
Thank you.
My question is for Steve. I have an iPhone 8 Plus. And I would really like to print to a printer, Dell printer, and I can't find the right app or the right combination to do that.
The printer has to have the AirPrint software built into it. If Dell doesn't have their own app, then you might be a little out of luck. There are programs that you can run on your PC to turn your computer into an AirPrint server. And then, so the phone sends it to the computer, and then the computer sends it to the printer. What's the one I use? I can't remember it now, because so many printers, pretty much every printer in the last 5 years or so has had AirPrint built in.
There is a mobile print app for Dell.
Oh, they have one?
Yeah.
Yeah, some printer companies make an app instead of putting AirPrint in their printer. It used to be that they put in AirPrint for Apple devices and Google Print for Google devices, and then PCL for everybody else.
Well, but if he goes into, what is it, connections and something in AirPrint, shouldn't it find the printer if it has AirPrint?
Yes. So when you print a document, you search for the printer, and if it finds it, it will let you print to it. There's a hardware device... where did it go? Called the, I just lost it again.
What is your printer?
The model number.
Model.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on.
HandyPrint. That's the one I use. It's $5. HandyPrint with a capital P. Although these are for Mac. I'm not sure about Windows.
This is a Dell B1165M. FW.
Okay.
Quickly Googling.
I believe that does, in fact, have AirPrint in it.
Well, for some reason, my phone can't find it.
You may have to turn it on in the printer console.
Right.
Well, is the printer connected to your network, or is it connected USB to a computer?
Network.
Okay.
Wireless.
What was that number again? The printer model number?
B1165NFW.
Because a lot of times printers will be rebranded from some other manufacturer. So Dell may not have made it. It might be an HP underneath. And you could use the HP app.
And how do I find out if this printer is one of those?
Usually look in their knowledge base.
It is, in fact, according to Dell's website, the B1165 NFW is indeed an AirPrint compatible printer.
Maybe he's just got to see if it's turned on.
So you need to turn on in the operator panel menu.
And I'll post this link.
Where you can go do stuff. You have to make sure that Bonjour, which God forbid they use the real DNS. They have to make their own. Bonjour and IPP are set to enable. And once they are, actually, if you have the Dell printer configuration web tool, which I believe you get to by using your browser to go to your printer, you can just turn on AirPrint.
Okay.
But Steve's going to post a link to how to do that. But once you've turned those on, then you should be able to, may want to restart the printer. But after you turn them on, but once those are turned on, your iPhone should then be able to see it when you go to print.
Okay. Is there a separate AirPrint app for the iPhone, or is it just...
No, it's just built in.
...to the OS?
Right, yeah, any app that can print to an AirPrint printer. But some printers have their own app you have to use instead. And it looks like this Dell printer uses Apple's AirPrint. So basically any file where you can print, there's a select printer command, and it will look on your network for the printer. Oh, make sure your phone is on the same network. We've run into that where the phone is still on cellular. It's not on the Wi-Fi, so it won't find it.
Right. Yeah.
And I'd restart your whole network. I mean, just so it's rediscovered.
Yeah, at least the phone. The printer. You want to restart the printer. But what?
Well, get the address, yeah.
What do you know what brand router you have?
Netgear.
Okay. I ran into a Netgear router once that blocked MDNS.
Why?
I don't know.
I don't mean why did you run into it.
Yeah. So same thing. A customer couldn't print from her phone, and we could see the packets going out of her computer. They never made it to the printer. I forget how we finally figured it out. Well, we plugged in a different router, and the router was blocking the packets.
That's so weird.
Yeah. So MDNS is the internet standard name. Zero config is what it's also called. So basically, devices on the network broadcast a packet and say, "Hi, here I am, and here's what I can do." And so a lot of network admins hate that because it adds noise to the network.
It adds a lot of noise to the network.
And so probably this router was geared for those types of people that want to turn off all that network noise.
Yeah. But you should give that a try.
Okay.
Make sure that you've turned on AirPrint on your Dell printer, and then maybe restart the printer and then see if you can find it. If you can't, then restart your whole network and try it, but save that step for two.
Okay.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
Yep. Bye-bye.
And that was sort of designed so they're putting the AirPrint driver in the printer instead of needing to have millions of drivers that you have to load into your phone.
Right.
So the problem we have now with even the computers, you want to load the printer driver, it's got to go out and find, through all those drivers. Even, like Dell might have 1,000 printers.
Right.
That all use different drivers for some stupid reason.
Right.
And HP, heaven forbid you have two different HPs on your network and trying to get them to talk to each other.
Or trying to talk to both of them.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
And so, Apple said, hey, how about you printer guys just use this generic protocol?
Right. and one of the things that I have is I have a Brother printer. And there is an app for that.
Yeah, Brother uses an app. Epson uses an app. HP uses an app. But for some of their printers, For other printers, AirPrint's built in. Makes no sense at all.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. But I have that. I have that. So if I ever actually want to print from my phone, which I never do, I can do that pretty easily just through the app. And in addition to that, by the way, the part that I really like about that is the app lets me scan, and that I do use.
Yeah.
Because I have an all-in-one printer, and so I can scan and print.
Network scanning has been tricky for a while, too. Especially the printers gives you this nice button on the printer itself, scan to computer. Almost never works.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like also Windows. Man, it seems as far as Windows 10, every time they do a darn update, it messes up the mapping or finding.
It messes up everything.
Yeah.
Finding other devices. My OneDrive, my backup, like Buffalo Drive, it keeps losing that on Windows 10 machines.
And Nowhere else, just on Windows 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you got to go in there and into the manager and turn on different units to constantly run.
I just found another note on a Dell support site. Check the printer for a firmware update.
Yeah, you should always do that. Listen, people, every device has firmware in it, and you're the administrator for your network now. So you need to check for updates on your router, on your printer, on your computers, on your phone, on your desktop, on your laptop.
Most of them will notify you when an update's available, but you have to opt in to receiving emails and notifications.
Right. So, yeah, you definitely you do need to do that. I check each of them first of the month, first of every month.
Some of them are
security updates.
Yeah.
And I will update them automatically faster. But every month I just go check by hand just because I'm a belt and suspenders guy. I was a systems administrator for 20 years. So I go check by hand as well as get the notifications.
Yeah.
Just to be sure in there. And and if you do the update, you do the update at a time. Of course, I'm up at 3 a.m. and I'm the only one who is, so I can, I can update my router at 3 a.m. and I
restart
don't disturb
it.
Anybody.
It doesn't affect anybody,
right? But and the same with
then,
the printer.
Then one time you hear the neighbor screaming, "What happens to the internet?"
If my neighbors can guess my router password,
yeah.
God bless them. They deserve to be on that
You're
network.
Welcome to it.
Same with mine. I mean,
so yeah,
NPass has made my life so...
Yeah, but I've made one mistake.
What?
One of my online services, one of the streaming services, like I won't tell you which one, but one of them, still has a very, very long 64-character password on it. And every time my daughter gets a new device, she asks me for that password. She gets really angry.
I know where you're going with this,
Because it's left, down,
over,
enter, up, right, enter. And I get that. So I've got to make... That's the only one left I have to make slightly smaller.
You can't hook up a wireless mouse to it?
It's her devices. I'm not going to... Whatever she wants to do.
Yeah. No, but I mean for retyping it in...
No, I understand that. I do understand
She
that.
Should... You can get even the smaller little keyboard and wireless mouse for around $20 and only hook it up when you need it.
I've got one, and I offered it to her.
And
I don't need it, Dad. Okay.
Okay. Then
it's absolutely all right.
Make them 64 longer.
Right. But, yeah, so those are the only ones that are less than 64 characters.
Yep.
Yeah.
Not significantly less, but less.
Yep.
I've got my birthday calculations up. We have crossed over 200 years of... computer knowledge between the three of us.
Wow. Wow.
Damn.
You're old.
Yeah. I feel it now.
Yeah, you are 2,240,744,248 seconds old.
And I feel every one of them today.
I'm approaching 2 trillion. I'm 1.8 trillion seconds old.
There you go. That's old.
That's old.
Mm-hmm. I am 71 years old, and I am proud of every minute. There were at least three times in my life I should have died. I'm still here. 71 years, I'm proud of it.
Remember when you were a kid and 50 was old?
40.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I had aunts 30 years old, and I thought, cheese and crackers.
And they acted old.
And they acted old.
Yeah.
That was the big thing.
You sit there with, you know, they have their shawl on and their crochet, and they're just sitting on the chair, and
yep,
they're 45.
I'm 45 years old, and my life is over.
Well, okay. I was watching this one series, Barnwood Builders, and they were talking, you know, because he talks about restoring all these old cabins.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that he takes these houses apart. You'd think that, you know, regular siding and all that, and there's a log cabin underneath it.
Yeah.
And he talks about how folks back in those days, life expectancy mm-hmm. was maybe 40 to 50 years old. Yeah, right. 50 was ancient then.
Yep.
And it'd be three generations living in the cabin.
Yep.
Yeah. And everything was cut by hand, and, you know, the notching and everything else. It wasn't modern chainsaws yep. and all this other stuff that you see them doing now. Everything was based on that.
There's a series on one of the channels on the machines that changed the world, and I just saw one on power tools. And that was amazing.
All right.
Yeah.
Sorry. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's the top of the hour, and we are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 9 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites. Excuse me. I don't even remember eating.
That's hard to say.
Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
After 32 years, you'd think you'd get it right.
You'd think I'd know who we are and what we do.
No, not a clue.
I'm old now. I don't remember. It's
Wait a minute. If you think you're old, where does that put me?
You're ancient. I'm old. He's a puppy. That's how it works.
At least Rob is still younger than me.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, he's still...
And listen, I hate to break it to you. There's a lot of people younger than you now. give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. While I read the next news item, it appears that for many people out there, the scheduled alarms feature on the Google Clock app is flat out broken, with the bug preventing preset alarms from going off. On the back of this issue, the Play Store listing now has a deluge of one-star ratings from disgruntled users. A growing thread over on the r Google Pixel subreddit noted that many devices have been skipping their morning alarms or haven't or don't show as upcoming on their Pixel devices. The problem also shows any previously scheduled alarms as missed shortly after set alarm was pre-programmed to go off. According to the large volume of negative and one-star reviews left on the Google Clock app Play Store listing, these broken alarms have been affecting people for a little while already. However, the problem doesn't appear to be limited to just Pixel devices. Complaints come from owners of devices from all the biggest OEMs, including OnePlus, Samsung, and Xiaomi. Most complaints are from people frustrated that Google Clock alarms are broken and won't go off, leading to late wake-ups and the scorn of employers. While anecdotal, in the original thread on the Pixel subreddit, some have mentioned that the culprit appears to be putting their phone face down in the flip-to-sh mode.
Yep.
Quiet, flip to quiet silence.
Right.
Because if you take your watch or phone, you put it upside down, it silences it. So
right. This does hint that it could be related to the on-device Do Not Disturb mode and Google Clock not overriding any system settings. It's not clear if this is what is affecting devices from other OEMs, though. Luckily, Google is aware of the broken clock app. Google has issued a statement saying that the problem likely is a result of Spotify integration. You can set your phone to your Spotify account so it turns on Spotify instead of an alarm to wake you up. So you wake up to Spotify music. And they're saying that the problem is that Spotify integration. And the solution is just to switch to one of the on-device default alarms to ensure that your scheduled alarms go off on time. So instead of hearing music, you hear the doodly-doodly-doodly or whatever you pick. While a wholly encompassed solution is not yet available, it appears that the recent Google Clock version 6.4.1 has improved the issues and broken alarms for some people out there, according to various Play Store reviews and even those on Twitter. Even though multiple solutions have been offered up, it appears that some are now able to use their Spotify playlist as an alarm tone again without missing a notification. At least until a solution is forthcoming, it may be worthwhile to try out a different alarm or a different alarm app to be 100% certain you wake up on time. So do you use your phone to wake up? Give us a call, assuming you're awake. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
I have to set two alarms because I've seen sometimes one of them turns off at 3 in the morning. It thought I got up and hit the off button.
Interesting.
Which is weird. Random times. Sometimes when I'm not even up to go to the bathroom at that time.
Yeah, right. Right. Now, I don't have, I use my alarm 7 days a week, and it's never been a problem. But I use the standard, one of the standard sounds on the phone.
Yeah.
Rather than.
I use an app that tracks my sleep, and that's the one that sometimes turns itself off, but then the standard alarm always works.
Yeah.
Same here.
All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Yeah, hi, guys. I wonder if you could give me a clarification after talking to Samsung. I'm kind of confused. I took your advice and just double-checked my record. It's an Android. I think it's a 9, whatever, thereafter. And just to see if everything was backed up on Samsung, the toggle switches are hit, say backup, blah, blah, blah. And then when I go to the Google account, this is what throws me. It says nothing is backed up. It says after 2 hours of charging and on Wi-Fi, then the backup starts. But nothing that I'm more concerned about, the pictures and videos that I have, nothing is backed up. And then at the bottom it says you can also do it by mobile data, which I have. I don't have a hotspot right now. I don't have a router,
right,
whatever. But so I clicked that finally went on, and I waited, and so I went back to the Google update now, or I should say backup now, and you click that sort of like a bar, and nothing happens. So I don't know if it's programmed or it prefers to do it over Wi-Fi, but it also gives you the mobile data application. But I thought if you told the phone to back it up, it would just presume that you'd back up everything. That just must be, I'm guessing now, from the Samsung cloud, and Google just has done nothing.
It may be that it can only back up to one place, and you can't back up to two different destinations.
It's funny, though, because right in there, it's in the apps, and you click the app, and it'll come up on your, I'm sorry, if you click the, if you go into the Samsung app, it'll come up, and Google is listed right on there.
Right.
It'll bring it up, and it says, it gives you the option to add an account also. See, this is what throws me. I was talking to the Samsung customer service, and the presumption was that once you just tell the toggle switch button to do it, it does the whole thing. I mean, backup to me means back up everything.
But you have to select account you want to back up to.
Right, exactly. I didn't know that. That's what she said. No, she said you got to tell the account. I thought the phone knew that automatically. Apparently, it doesn't. It's just you got to specifically tell it videos and whatever's in there that you have to list it. Hopefully, I didn't check to see, but I'm sure pictures are there because there's a lot of data left on the Google side of it. I got a lot of data left that I could maybe stick the pictures and videos in there. But so what would you suggest? You go to a Wi-Fi spot?
No, hold on. First, on that Google phone, are you logged in to your Gmail account?
Yeah, it should be, yes.
Well, it should be in an R, two different things. The next thing to do is check to see, go to photos.google.com and see if your photos are there being backed up automatically by the Google Photos app.
Okay. Go ahead. Yep.
If they're not, then go to Google Photos and turn that on. And it will then back. Of course, that takes a while, obviously, depending on how many photos you have.
And it also prefers Wi-Fi because it doesn't want to run your cell bill up.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But you can tell it that you are, that you can use in that app. You can also tell it to use your cellular data as well.
But you
have to turn that on in pretty much every app, because every app assumes you don't want to use your cellular data to back that stuff up.
Okay. Maybe that's it. Maybe just a, from their standpoint being nice. But, yeah, I've got unlimited. So that's what threw me, because they even clicked it on this morning before I called.
Right.
Nothing. And you click the bar to do it, and it just won't respond. So
right. But each app has to be told it's okay to use cellular data.
I got you. Okay. That's good to know. Okay. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
All right. Good luck.
I know.
Bye-bye. Yeah, there's just... things have gotten so complex. You don't have, because you know, if it's an actual Android app, you might think, well, they'll just use the Android settings. Not always true.
Uh-oh.
And certainly, if it's not an app from Google, it may not use those settings at all. It may use its own settings. So for something, always be sure. Right. Always first, you know, for your photo backup, go to photos.google.com and see if you are indeed backed up, if they're there. If not, then there's something else you have
like
to do.
Like my grandfather used to say, if you assume, you soon thereafter become the first three letters of that word.
That's exactly right. So you want to make sure that those things are turned on. I owe a photo to a friend of mine, and I did not put that in Google Photos, so I have to wait till I get home to send him that one. I don't know why I didn't put it up there.
And does the Android program let you back up to two destinations at the same time?
I don't know that. That's a lovely question.
So you may have to pick whether you want to go to your Samsung cloud or your Google cloud.
Yeah, I was going to say,
you can do both.
Probably you got to do one, then the other. I doubt if it can do both at the same time.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I would be very surprised if it could.
And now, does Samsung have a backup program separate from the Android backup program?
Well, and that's the other problem. Yeah. Yes, it does. That's the other problem with these things in general. My beloved bride has a Samsung phone, and she went, and you know, I said, I'm sure it's in Photos. Go look in your Photos. You'll do a search. It's easy. Find the picture you want. There's no photos in there. Oh, right. You're on a Samsung phone. We never turn that on. Right. Right. So, yeah. You can back up. There's multiple. Okay. So there's a backup by Google One.
And it looks like
which backs up over Wi-Fi after it's been idle and charging for 2 hours. That's how backup one works.
So when you plug it in at night, leave it on and plugged in and charging, connected to your Wi-Fi. Typically, that's when it would do it.
It'll do it overnight. And that's the best time to do it anyways.
And if he doesn't have home Wi-Fi, he's relying on his cellular. It will never run because it never sees Wi-Fi.
Right. Right. And in fact, mine says some data not backed up. I just clicked backup now. I went into settings, searched for backup, found that, and it backed up, and now it's completely backed up, and life is good.
But you're on Wi-Fi here too.
I am on Wi-Fi, but it told it to back up. I specifically said back up.
And that's he was saying he says that and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So he probably has to go into the security settings and let the backup program access his cell data.
Yeah, because we can't
and each backup program separately
that he has Wi-Fi at home.
It looks like Samsung's backup program is called Smart Switch.
Yeah.
Because a lot of folks,
that really screams backup to me, something called Smart Switch.
Yeah. Yeah.
A number of folks, though, you can't say, well, just let the Wi-Fi backup. A lot of folks don't have Wi-Fi turned on.
Right.
There's a lot of folks that'll maybe just have one computer and a monitor, and the router is hooked right up to that, and that's all they do.
Right. So I'm in my phone now. Under settings, what am I in? Settings, network and internet, mobile network. And I can turn on mobile data, which isn't necessarily on by default. I can turn on roaming, which isn't necessarily on by default. I can see how much data I've used.
Well, the hotspot net you can turn on just on your Pixel. All I do to turn on my hotspot.
Well, this is I understand hotspot, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about using it for data and backup right now. So hold that thought, because that's a separate issue. Let's not confuse this right now. You can also set data warnings and limits.
Oh, I see where you're going.
Yeah. And of course, if you're unlimited, you don't need to set data warnings and limits.
Yeah.
But you can, and so check to see if that's on, and therefore you've hit that limit.
Could be. Yeah.
And now
might have accidentally turned it on.
Exactly right. It's exactly right.
Yeah, might have accidentally turned on, and you're limiting yourself.
Right. And so.
Well, it's doing just what you told it to do.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So you need to do a little bit of
it's like
detective
the folks,
work.
It's like the folks that get click happy.
Exactly.
You know, sometimes they'll swipe stuff in that and go buy it, and it's on and it should be really off, but don't take the time to read each item because they're in a hurry and want to do it quick.
That's right. Okay, now you can talk about that.
Yeah, no, it's just a hotspot. I mean, that's one thing I'm using constantly. I love on the Pixel that I can just, you know, swipe it down, and by, you know, going over, turn my hotspot. Boom, one click.
But you have to check with your carrier, because some carriers charge extra for hotspot and some don't.
Right.
Yeah.
It depends on where you are and who your carrier is.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Here, for at least some Verizon users, hotspots are free.
Yeah, mine is.
Because Verizon bought public Spectra and to use for the cellular network. And the government said, yeah, okay, but you have to allow hotspots.
My hotspot is just the Raspberry Pi, which I hook up to.
Right.
And I love having that feature, you know, because I can have the phone just because unlimited data, hook up my Pi. Boom, I'm connected to the internet and run my radio.
Yeah, I've discovered I don't really need unlimited data right now because I'm at home 99.9% of the time and I'm on my Wi-Fi network.
Yeah, but the time you change and then try to go back.
No, we've never, well, we haven't been unlimited for many, many, many years.
Oh, okay.
Although we took a train to New York once and I had unlimited data. My wife wanted to do her Facebook farming. So I said, yeah, let me set up a hotspot. Not a problem. So I set up the hotspot, and there it was. These two ladies come down the aisle. They see her doing Facebook. They said, is there Wi-Fi on this train? And my wife said, no, my husband's letting me use his hotspot. And they both went, oh, that's so sweet.
And then demanded the password?
Will he share?
Yeah, no.
We were at
no, I will not share, but I'm thank you. They didn't ask. They were polite enough not to ask.
We were at one of the outdoor concerts at the Fairport Shell, and people kept trying to send me photos. And I finally had to turn my photo sharing off, and I tried hollering out, wrong Steve, because the name on my phone is Steve's phone.
Yeah.
Wrong Steve. I don't want your photos.
I've gotten some stuff through all kinds of apps, including Facebook and Twitter and all kinds of things, and a lot of emails. And I clearly am not the person that they were intending to send those pictures to. I am clearly not that person. I appreciated them.
but I wasn't
the person. I deleted them, but I was not the Nick they were trying to send them to.
Oops.
Nick at Night.
It could have been Nick at Night. No, it was a Nick
there
at
it
Night.
Is.
Yes. Yes. But yeah, so, and that's the other thing out there, people. You see a lot of celebrity nudes come out and blah, blah, blah. Sometimes the phones are hacked. Sometimes they just send them to the wrong Steve.
Yep.
You know, you got to be careful where you're sending that stuff. And I know we're all in a hurry. God forbid we take an extra half a second to do anything anymore. But when you type Nick in your phone, don't just hit enter. Make sure you got the right Nick.
Yep.
Especially if you've got a very large phone book with names in it. You know, you start talking, 200-300 contacts.
And I don't know about...
Might go to somebody else that you really didn't want.
And I'm not quite sure we can call some of the celebrity phone hacks because they had a stupid password.
Well, that, yes.
It was their dog's name.
Yeah. It's all the things they've answered on Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Over the years. Oh, I took the quiz and now they know my dog's name and my mother's maiden name and all the answers to my security questions.
First car you owned, where you flew the first time you went on an airplane, the first concert you went to.
Your favorite color.
Yep. Yep.
Blue.
No, yellow. Ah!
Have you seen that meme going around? There's two types of D&D parties, Lord of the Rings and Monty Python.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Those are the look. Let's talk about that for just a minute. If you're on Facebook or Twitch or Twitter or any of those things and you get those quizzes, do not take them. They are specifically designed to farm your security and password information. That's what they're for. You know, oh, pick your birthday and we'll tell you what elf you are. No, many people use their birthday as a PIN number. Okay, now they've got your PIN number. Congratulations.
Or the year you were born.
Yep.
The year you were born or all of that stuff. And I don't need anybody knowing those things about me because I'm not that desperate to know what elf I am or, you know, any of that nonsense.
Well, some of them will
what Disney princess I am. I honestly don't care what Disney princess I am.
Well, we already know which one of the dwarves, seven dwarves you are.
Oh, yes, you do.
But they also get clever.
And I'm not happy.
Yeah.
That they'll get you to ask you two separate questions to form one name. You think, oh, that's cute. I got to do this and this, and they'll put it together to make my name. Yeah, they've gotten now twice the amount of information
from
you.
Well, you get your first name, your last name, and your birthday.
Yeah.
Month and year, whatever. Oops.
Or they just ask for the month and day and not the year, so you think that's okay.
Yeah, right.
But that quiz, they ask for the year.
That's exactly right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported. Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And join us tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, which is something or other Zulu time. And we'll be in the Soundbites Lounge.
That would be 1 o'clock Zulu.
Thank you.
Or UTC, rather.
Yeah, right, 1 o'clock UTC. Join us at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, /lounge, L-O-U-N-G-E. And at 9 o'clock tomorrow night Eastern time, you will see a link. You may have to refresh your screen if you got there early. You'll see a link to the lounge, and you can join us there. And it's a video chat thing, courtesy of Mastermind Lounge, and we will be answering your computer questions and chit-chatting and having a good old time. I do that twice a week, once for Soundbites and once for Ask Nick. And it's a lot of fun all the way around. In the meantime, Google will remove your ability to access your email and calendar if you have an old Android device. In July, Google announced that it will soon remove sign-in abilities for Android devices that run Android 2.3.7. or older. Now, Android 2.3.7 was released in 2010.
Ancient.
It's 11 years old. This change will occur starting September 27th of this year, making many users no longer eligible to check their Google-based email or calendar on their phone. When support ends for sign-in with a Google account on Android 2.3.7 and below, you will receive a username or password error if you try to sign into your devices or to add an email or calendar account, Google said. It's not just your email and calendar you need to worry about, however. Other major Google made apps that rely on the Google account will all stop working as well. This includes YouTube, Google Play Store, Google Maps, Waze, you know, all of them. But this isn't the first time Apple has limited ability for access for older Android users. In 2017, the company took its first shot at people with Android 2.3 by stopping Google Pay contactless payments. I love Google Pay contactless payments. And outside of Google, WhatsApp removed its app from services running anything Android 2.3.7 and older last year. According to Google, this change is part of the company's ongoing efforts to keep users safe. In order to continue having access to those services and apps, Google says you must update to a newer Android version of 3.0 or higher. If you do not have the ability to update to a newer system, the company says you can try logging into your Google account on your device's actual web browser, not the app. You can then still use some Google services through the browser. There's a good chance you might not even realize you have an older version of Android. You can find your device's version number in your settings app and check for any system updates. But Google does warn that older devices can't always run newer Android versions, so there may not be an ability for you to update your existing phone. For example, Sony's Xperia Advanced and Lenovo are two of the most popular smartphones still running the oldest version of Android. So are you still running an 11-year-old version of Android? Give us a call if you can. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
With my rotary landline phone.
With your rotary landline phone.
No, I still have a friend who has one of those old flip phones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Somebody did ask about the item you just talked about, the Payless. Explain that.
What Payless is? I love it. It's a thing where you can, it's Google Pay on the iPhones. It's called Apple Pay. And you put your credit card information into your phone. And then when you go to a place, instead of using the tap to pay with your card, you tap to pay with your phone. The reason I like that is that for both my credit card and my PayPal card, each of them will create a one-time use number. So even if somebody steals that number, it's no longer any good.
Yep.
I love that. Thank you. Having had my credit card stolen once, believe me, I love it.
It does make my accounting a little tricky because I have to keep track of which random number this came from. Fortunately, Apple Pay uses the MasterCard network, and Apple Cash uses the Discover network.
Right, so that helps.
That helps a little bit, yeah. Now, Walmart has a similar thing, Walmart Pay, except they want your checking account information, and they draw directly out of your checking account for their system. And that's why it hasn't caught on very well.
Yeah, exactly.
It's too much information for them to have, and have somebody breach that?
Yeah.
But it works exactly the same way that your tap-to-pay credit card. You know, you get the card with the chip now?
Yep.
You just tap it on the reader. Any one of those readers, you can also tap your phone. You start the app, and then you tap your phone.
You don't need just the chip. There's a second symbol. The Wi-Fi symbol looks like radio waves.
Right.
Tap-to-pay. My bank, I have a chip card, but they haven't done tap-to-pay yet.
I'm very
annoyed by it. But it works with tap-to-pay in my phone, that same bank card.
Same exact card, yeah.
I think mine has.
So, yeah, my card does tap-to-pay, but I can't tell you the last time I used my card.
No, mine doesn't have the tap-to-pay.
CNB doesn't do tap-to-pay.
Right. But your phone will with that card. So you
mm-hmm.
can add that phone to Google Pay. And tap with, and I do that.
And it uses the fingerprint reader or Face ID reader on your phone for authentication. I can do it on my watch, too.
I
stick my arm into the drive-thru window to tap to pay on there.
The other day I had a very new person in the drive-thru line.
I've done that.
And I held out my phone, and she said, "Why are you giving me your phone?" I said, no, it's tap to pay. Oh, Apple Pay. No, Google Pay. Oh, I don't think we do Google. Yeah, you did last week when I was here. So, yes, you probably
they
still
don't have
do
a
Google
clue.
Pay. But she got it. She got it figured out. She talked to somebody, and they said, it's this other terminal.
Yeah.
I don't know why it's not the same terminal.
Well, we went through the whole added the chip, And all the merchants had to buy a new terminal.
Right.
Yeah. Then, like a month later, the tap to pay came out, and you got to buy another new terminal.
Right.
So a lot of places didn't do it.
And they have to absorb that cost.
Right.
Yeah. If your company had enough forethought, they would have bought the terminal that could do both.
Right.
at that first time.
Right. But so yeah, so now you know, it's just a matter of training employees, and I can see where something like that slips through the cracks.
I've had a couple of people say, "Oh, I don't think we take that." Well, there's the symbol on the reader. I'll just show you that works.
Yeah, because as long as it's tap to pay, it will work.
Yep.
Apparently,
either Google or Apple or Samsung, they all use the same NFC technologies.
Right. So if they just have the one tap to pay terminal, it will work. There is a separate one, at least in the places, one or two of places that I go, they have a separate one for Apple Pay, which they probably bought
later,
back in the day or whatever. But and they're still using it instead of just, you only need the one.
Yeah.
They all do the same NFC tap, near field communication.
Well, they go into a different account. We used to have that in our store for a while where MasterCard we put into this account and Visa we put into that account to help differentiate them.
Right. Your charges.
Yeah. But basically anywhere you can use tap to pay, you know, where you just tap your card instead of sliding it in the slot or handing it to somebody, you just tap it on the terminal. Any place that has one of those, you can use your phone. My favorite is when you go to a place and you take out your phone, you set it up, and you go to tap, and they go, "Oh, our terminal doesn't do..." Oh.
Yep.
It does.
Yeah, and like I said, it's always it's a unique one. I don't know if it's unique. It's a one-time number.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So I do not worry about somebody stealing
it. Random number.
Yep. So I now use that everywhere I can because I can use my, you know, and I have a few bucks in PayPal, so I use that up too. And that's how that works for me. So I'm very happy. I'm very happy, but you're going to lose the ability to do that, and among many other things, if you're still using a very old version of Android. And honestly, if your phone is 11 years old, you really shouldn't be that surprised when something stops working. Oh. I'm sorry, but that's just that's a fact.
Yep. We still have people complain about, you know, 10-year-old computers. It's still working fine. Why can't I get this website? It's 11 years old.
Yeah.
And security has changed since then. Well, we have some now.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's like my friend, he came up to me, you know, because I was announcing over the radio that, you know, you can download this one app that we clock in with and out. And he says, "Well, I'll catch up with you. I'd like to be able to do that on my phone." So he brings, you know, we finally met up at this one place, and he shows me his phone, and it's this old flip phone.
Yeah.
And it's like, Bill, no.
No, ain't happening.
That won't even take any apps.
Right.
But he doesn't need it. I mean, all he uses that flip phone for is literally just making phone calls.
Hold on, wait a minute. You can make calls with a cell phone now?
That's what he discovered.
The hell does that happen?
Yeah, he doesn't have the capability of texting or checking the internet. He has that just to make phone calls. He calls his wife.
Our Chandra also said in the YouTube chat, big advantage to using your phone is you can turn off the NFC subsystem and software, which is true. Mm-hmm. You can't turn off tap to pay on your credit card. So there are people, you know, they can walk by with a reader and pick it off. And even if they do that, even if you don't turn off the NFC subsystem on your phone, if you haven't authorized it with your thumbprint or whatever, it's not going to work. So
tap to pay is only supposed to work within an inch or so.
Right.
But if the other end has a better antenna...
That's right. Mm-hmm.
You hear stories about the person behind you in the line getting paying for your groceries because they had their card out sooner.
Right.
Yeah.
I've run into that at Wegmans where I've got the Wegmans card up, and then it takes a minute to get up to the tap to pay section. And sometimes it would be faster just to have my physical card out.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'd like the tap to pay for the randomness of it.
Right. That's why you can get RFC blockers, little envelopes, to put your
a lot of wallets, cards in. Yeah. A lot of wallets nowadays, and they have that built mm-hmm. into them.
A Faraday cage.
Yeah. A Faraday cage. That's all. Yeah. Just
it's just a mesh material that they put on the outside liner where you would slip all your credit cards in. So once they're in that, it's like putting them in that sleeve that you would get with your credit cards.
When we got our passports, they gave us, I'm sure they charged us, they gave us holders for those that were Faraday cages. And it also came with a 4-pack of the little ones for your credit cards.
Isn't
which
it
is really
nice. Built into the cover of your card now, of your passport now?
Yeah, it is now.
Yeah.
I'm old, remember?
I just got my passport.
My passport number was 4. Yeah. Shut up.
Renewed. And I was surprised how fast they renewed it.
Yeah.
It only took like 6 weeks.
Yeah.
They're
pretty
boom.
Good at that.
Yeah.
Not that I intend to go anywhere soon.
Yeah, but it's handy just, you know, if you even want to go across the border.
Right.
You know, and it is one form of identification that, you know, if they require this is a passport, it is like gold. You know, that you with along with your driver's license and anything else, you know, I mean, you're pretty well set there.
Yeah, I had to do some stuff at Motor Vehicles, and they said, bring 3 forms of identification. I had my passport with me. She looked at it. She said, that's a good idea. You know, people bring in envelopes with addresses on them, and okay, but how do I prove that's me?
Yep.
Yeah, it always surprises me that those are acceptable forms of proof of residency. Someone with this name lives at this address. How do you know that's me?
Right.
Because you have it. Well, I went through his garbage yesterday.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. No dumpster diving.
Yeah, particularly if you hand something that says occupant.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's you, Mr. Occupant. Thank you. Mm-hmm. We appreciate that. But, yeah, so that's what the tap-to-pay thing is for. It's to keep you – it's faster first.
Yep.
Nowadays, of course, touchless contact should be – yep. The default everywhere.
In fact, our bank told us to stop having people sign the screen for credit cards.
Oh, yeah.
Because of COVID.
Yeah, because then you don't have they told us to sign COVID on it ourselves, so you don't have to have all the public touching your screen and sanitize it every time.
Right. But yeah, because of the whole COVID thing and trying to be safe, it is a very good idea to use tap to pay. And even better than tap to pay is using Apple Pay or Google Pay right in your phone. And it only, again, you have to have a semi-recent phone. Those of you with 11-year-old phones probably don't have tap to pay in them. But any recent phone, you can set it up in just a few minutes with your credit card information, your PayPal card, your Visa, your MasterCard, whatever you got, your Apple card, whatever those all are. And from then on, you can just pull out your phone, open it up with your fingerprint or your face or your, however you open it.
Yep.
And go, boom, you're done. It's much more secure than using your credit card in any other way. Yeah.
Especially at, you know, like a restaurant where they walk away with your card.
Every single day, we hand our credit cards to the lowest paid employees in America.
A lot of restaurants are now putting terminals at the table, which is nice. But we hear about Europe, they've been using chip and PIN rather than chip and sign because chips can be easily counterfeited and signatures can be easily counterfeited. But chip and PIN, you know, two things that make it harder.
Yeah.
And pay at the table have been so common for so long. You hear a lot about visitors will come here and where are you going with my credit card? Well, I'm going up to the register to pay.
Yeah.
Get back here. You can't walk away with my card.
That's right.
But they do.
They do. We allow it. It's, how it works here.
Most recent time my credit card number was stolen was that it, I'm pretty sure that had happened because it was like a week after we went to that restaurant and they walked away with the card. And then someone in Utah bought $500 worth of ski equipment.
Yep.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Thing. Yep. Since I have begun using tap to pay, since I've been using my phone exclusively, I've been fine no matter where I go. And I tell them
it helps with skimmers that are really common, especially at gas stations.
Yep.
Where there's a thing, pay attention to your gas stations you go to. And if the card reader looks different, there's a thing called a skimmer. And it will read your credit card information when you put it into the machine. So your charge
before the machine reads it. So it doesn't prevent the machine from reading. You're still buying your gas. You're still doing whatever you were doing. Mm-hmm. But they also now have a... Sorry, go ahead.
And, and most of the skimmers will have a little tiny camera in it to watch you type in your zip code. Or worse yet, the
or your PIN number.
Or your PIN, yeah. I hate using... In fact, I refuse to use debit at the gas station because of that problem. I always say it's credit. But the gas stations that don't require any secondary verification, they just read your card. They should require a zip code, the billing zip code. Some of them can require your street number address because it's numbers. So the more points of information they request, the more secure the transaction is, but the more obtrusive and annoying it is for as the customer. So that's why places don't
when
ask
you
for
got
it.
20 degrees weather out there and you're pumping gas and you got to punch in all
at
this.
Least the billing zip code.
You're right.
Yeah.
When that's and whenever I have to type that in, I do it like this. With the other hand covering the thing.
There have been stories about people with it used to be infrared cameras, and now your smartphone has an infrared filter. So then they can see the heat differential on your buttons, and 85% guess what your PIN is.
Right. There was, and I don't know if I still have it. If they discontinued it, an app that you could wave your camera, your phone in front of a thing, and it would tell you. Whether or not there was a skimmer,
and I've seen things that have a hidden camera finder, where your camera looks around, and if it sees another camera,
right?
Well, that'd be pretty hard nowadays with
there's cameras everywhere.
The cameras everywhere, and on everybody's phone that usually they have out and in their hand, and they're watching this or that.
Right. I don't think I still have the skimmer app on here, which may mean it. It went away because I do tend to keep. I'm a pack rat, and I certainly have enough space on my phone. So, yeah.
I keep running out of space. I need a bigger phone. Good thing my birthday is coming up.
Yeah,
there you go.
I'll get to buy myself a new phone.
I seriously am tempted by the 5A.
That is a nice little phone.
I'm seriously
tempted.
Didn't
they just announce the 6?
Bigger screen?
But they just announced the 6,
Yeah, but then it's going to be, the 6 will come out, but then the 6A will be like 6 or 8 months after that.
And I don't really need to spend $1,000 on a phone. I really don't.
Oh, hell no.
So the $500
5A. Well, look at it as $20 a month.
I don't do it that way.
Yeah.
Buy it and be done.
I'll be done. Because
the interest you save.
Exactly. I could buy two.
We joke in the Apple world, their financing is -3%. You put it on your Apple card, you get 3% back, and Apple doesn't charge interest for buying an Apple phone on your Apple card.
Oh, that is nice.
Yeah.
That is actually nice. So I might, and the problem is I had a friend, Jerry, bought one and had a devil of a time getting Verizon to switch him over. I don't know if what the entire story is, but I
was going to say because my stepson bought Sandy a brand new phone because hers was dying. Got her a new Pixel. Matter of fact, she's got the Pixel 4. the 4. And we took it into Verizon. They just quick took the card up.
Yeah, but see, the 5A doesn't have a SIM. It's an eSIM.
Oh.
So they have to do stuff, and apparently they did it not well. Yeah. So, but I eventually got the Pi 400, so I'm sure I'll eventually get the Pixel 5A.
Yeah. Some carriers are especially annoying switching phones. When we have customers come in and get their iPhone repaired, they often get a loaner phone while it's out for repair. Sprint seems to be the worst company. You have to go to a physical Sprint store to get your ID changed to the new loaner phone, and then you got to do it again when you get your original phone back. Everyone else, you just pull the SIM out, put it in the new phone. Okay.
Yeah.
And away it goes, yeah.
When I switched from the Pixel, whichever one I had, to the 3A, that was easy. I bought the phone at a Verizon store. It was a Verizon phone to begin with. I walked in, they moved the SIM 2 minutes, Done. I don't know that you can buy a Pixel 5a at a Verizon store. I think you can only get them online. I don't know that. I haven't been in a Verizon store to look.
Yeah.
But if that's true, then I don't know how difficult it is.
I would think they'd be carrying them.
Well, you'd certainly think so. So yeah. I'll have to find out.
I mean, you'd have to go
online. Well, if anybody knows, let us know.
Or go online. Verizon store.
Yeah.
And just check.
I should just look.
And see if they're carrying it yet as one of their phones. Because, like I say, they usually stay pretty much up to date as far as providing the latest and greatest. I remember... remember when I had that Torch phone and they tried to talk me into the one that was a little bit less, but somebody had already told me about the Pixel. And they were trying to tell me, well, you can't walk out of here with that. You know, it could burst out in flames. I go, oh, well, then I'll go out with a burst of flame. Because they wanted to earn the spiffs on that other phone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I said, no, I want to wait. I'm waiting 2 weeks, and I had to wait 2 weeks because then the Pixel came out, and I got it, and I fell in love with it from that day on. I mean, it was great. There was no bloatware because I looked at it. I go, wait a minute, there's not much on it. And they go, yeah, you get to put what you want on it.
Yeah, it comes with nothing. Particularly the folks.
Go, cool.
Yeah. Particularly the folks who, no, you may not know my location. I'm not here anyway. Particularly the folks who had Samsung phones, which 90% of your phone is filled up with crap you can't delete.
Bloatware.
Yeah.
No, I need every one of those.
Yeah, they have the 5, but not the 5A, which is interesting.
See, we've got the iPhone 13 coming out next. Oh, yeah, next week is an Apple announcement. They announced the announcement.
Yeah, they announced the announcement.
Next Tuesday
we'll
is the announcements, and it's California streaming is is the theme. So everyone's wondering what that means. Is are they going to do a new streaming podcast studio app or something like that? What hardware they're going to go?
I'm particularly interested if they're going to play the Mamas and the Papas.
Mama and Papas, yeah. California Dreaming.
I'll tell you what. That's where I fell in love with the sound of the human voice in close harmony. Those people singing them, Simon and Garfunkel, the early Beatles. That's the stuff I used to listen to.
Sounds of Silence.
And Mama Cass Elliot, what a voice that woman had. Holy moly. Anyway, so I don't think they have it online, but I'll look and see. I'll stop at a store.
Yeah.
I'm able to do that. I'm perfectly capable of that. We'll see. All right. We are done for another week. This was the second show of our 32nd year on the air. We finished 31. We're hurtling headlong into our 32nd year on
air. Yeah, I've been counting them by calendar year. Maybe I should count them by show year.
There you
go. Fiscal year. Yeah, we need a name for that.
Yeah, we do. But I want to thank Dave Enright. Want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Want to thank all of you called or typed in. We appreciate all of that. Listen, we'll be back in just 166 hours with a whole lot more sound bites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1. Like I said, you've got 166 hours to go do something else. So spend it being kind to one another, will you? We'll see you next week.